We continue now relating about the hadrocha that Rav Mordechai, about the training, the chassidic training Rav Mordechai gave to the members of the community of Dubrovna, and about those who became adherents and some who frowned upon some of the conduct of Rav Mordechai. When the Rabbi Yisrael Nachman and Rabbi Yusik arrived at the large Beis HaMedrash, they discovered that quite a few minyonim of Jews were there, together with many young folk and even a few of the prominent elders. Foremost among the assembly was Rabbi Avram Shol Palatnik. Rabbi Yisrael Nachman became greatly excited, for he was enchanted by Rabbi Mordechai's delightful davening. A few of the prominent elders approached Rabbi Yisrael Nachman and began to express their wonder at Rabbi Mordechai's conduct. The time for afternoon prayers had arrived quite a while ago, but here was the Maggid still reciting the Shmoneh Esrei of Shacharis. Just then, Rav Shaul Mivansker's older sons-in-law arrived. They were quite pleased to hear the comments of the elders, for this was a perfect opportunity to voice their opposition to the Maggid, which they had previously kept to themselves. They began to recite the rules concerning Shmoneh Esrei. The Shmoneh Esrei is to be said three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening. The time when the Shachar Shmoneh Esrei may be recited is from sunrise until noon. The Mincha Shmoneh Esrei may be recited from a certain time past noon until sunset. The Maariv Shmoneh Esrei may be recited from nightfall until midnight. So, if someone was reciting the Shachar Shmoneh Esrei when it was already Mincha time, which Shmoneh Esrei should he in fact be reciting, Shacharis or Mincha? A learned debate ensued, for all those present were quite erudite, and several of them were great scholars. The Psholem's son Hirschel, who was then still a young lad, was very devoted to the Maggid, and deep in his heart he resented his oldest two brothers-in-law. He was aware that the debate taking place was on the highest level of scholarship, but he was offended by the irreverent tone of the scholars' remarks. He went over to his younger brothers-in-law, who had been standing and listening to Rabbi Mordechai's davening, and reported what had been said. However, they were so engrossed in Rabbi Mordechai's davening that they didn't hear anything their brother-in-law Hirschel told them. Unable to calm himself, Hirschel returned to where the company of scholars still debated, discovering that discussion had become even more heated. He was unable to follow the scholarly argument itself, but after hearing a few words, he did realize that the whole group was of the opinion that Rav Mordechai's conduct was not in accordance with law. This fact saddened him greatly. Rav Avram Shol Palatnik had been standing there the entire time, but had kept his silence. This Rav Avram Shol was considered one of the greatest scholars, for he possessed both broad knowledge as well as deep understanding. When the Maggid had first begun his Ein Yankiv lectures in the Gravediggers Beis HaMedrash, Rav Avram Shol had come to hear him. After the Ein Yankiv and Maariv were finished, Rav Avram Shol had asked Rav Mordechai a question concerning an extremely difficult and complex Talmudic subject, and had been astonished by Rav Mordechai's genius. From that time on, Rav Avram Shol had been a passionate follower of Rav Mordechai. He was the first one to suggest that Rav Mordechai be appointed town Maggid. Rav Hirschel became furious when he noticed that Rav Avram Shol had been listening to the whole discussion without objecting. True, Rav Avram Shol had not supported those who claimed that the Maggid's conduct was unlawful, but on the other hand, he had not sided with the Maggid either. Meanwhile, Rav Mordechai finished his davening. Being in his private quarters, he knew nothing of the large crowd present in the Beis HaMedrash, though the wall was still broken and the door was gone. He washed his hands and sat down for a bite to eat. Rav Hirschel was overjoyed when he saw Rav Chaim Porush enter the Beis HaMedrash, where he knew that Rav Chaim held the Maggid in the highest esteem. He immediately approached Rav Chaim and told him all about the learned discussion, reporting that some had viewed the Maggid's conduct as unlawful. After listening patiently, Rav Chaim replied coldly, "Young boys have no business getting involved in the affairs of their elders." When Rabbi Avram Shaul noticed Rabbi Chaim Porush, he went over to him. He had first met Rabbi Chaim Porush many years earlier, when a complex problem had been brought before the previous Rav and Gaon, Rabbi Nishzerach. That was when Rabbi Avram Shaul had become Rabbi Chaim's fervent devotee, for he had never met so profound a scholar who possessed so much common sense. Rabbi Avram Shaul knew what it meant to be a genuine scholar, for he himself was a great scholar, with a quick and penetrating mind, and moreover, he was very diligent and assiduous in his study. In addition, he possessed an exceedingly great talent for grasping new concepts, and had an awesome memory to boot. Moreover, it was Rabbi Avram Shaul's custom to attend the grand fairs that were held annually in Polotsk, Minsk, Shklov, and even Brisk. That was how he got the name Palatnik. He would travel from one fair to another with his wagon and a portable market stall made of cloth, and this stall was called a palatke in Yiddish, and so he was known as Rabbi Avram Shaul Palatnik. Wherever he went, he took along two assistants who attended to the business, while Rabbi Avram Shaul went to the Beis HaMedrash to study and to converse with the other scholars and goyim who had come to the fair. In those days, it was quite common for many scholars and goyim to gather wherever there was a fair. First, because there were many legal disputes among the merchants that had to be ruled upon. Second, because any special laws or proclamations that the assembled goyim thought necessary to adopt would be quickly disseminated to all localities by the people who had attended the fair. Every time Rabbi Avram Shaul returned from a fair, he brought back with him a large inventory of pilpulim and novel insights on various Torah topics that he had heard from the world-famous goyim, and some that he had conceived himself. It was after he returned from the fairs he had attended during Elul in Minsk and in Brisk that he first learned of the recent changes in Reb Chaim Porush's conduct. Now he could see for himself that Reb Chaim was more worldly than before. Nevertheless, it was still with the greatest respect that he approached Reb Chaim. At first, it struck him as exceedingly strange that Reb Chaim had come to the large Beis HaMedrash at all, for he thus was wasting time that he could have been spending in Torah study. But then he remembered hearing that the Maggid and Reb Chaim had an appointed time when they studied Pilpul together. Since his recent return from the fairs, Reb Avram Shaul had not yet had the opportunity to meet with Reb Chaim and share with him the novel Torah insights in Pilpulim he had heard at the various fairs. This trip had not been as profitable as usual. Rav Avram Shaul had not returned until a few days before Rosh Hashanah. The first fair had been in Minsk during the early part of Elul, while the second fair had been in Brisk in the middle of the month. The Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Elul was the last time he had heard a sermon from the Maggid. He had greatly admired the drasha, the sermon, as well as the one who should not take a leaf pilpul the Maggid had presented to him. And it was customary that in light of the saying of the Gemara that one should not take leave of his fellow Jew without first discussing some halacha with him, for because of this he will remember him, that's the quote in the Gemara Brachas, so when one Jew would leave another, they would discuss matters of learning, and this was called the Al Yipota Odom discussion. Al Yipota Odom Halacha, or Al Yipota Odom Pilpul, and this was the pilpul that the Maggid had presented to Rabbi Avram Shaul before his departure. This recent trip was probably the first time, except when the Belenitsa genius had visited, that he had left home for the fairs with so many novel insights, pilpulim and halacha discussions, especially those dealing with the exact wording of the text of the Rambam. During the several weeks when Rabbi Avram Shaul had studied with the Maggid, the quality of his study had risen to even higher levels. At each daily session, he learned some new insight or profound pilpul, for the Maggid's logical analysis were solid feats of intellect. One needed an exceptionally good mind to appreciate them. Rabbi Avraham Scholl remembered the Belenitsa genius's visit very well, despite the fact that he, Rabbi Avraham Scholl, had still been quite young at the time. It was only the second time he had accompanied his father-in-law, Rabbi Pfeffer, a Torah scholar of great diligence, who never slept for more than 3 hours a day. To keep from dozing off, his father-in-law, Rabbi Avraham Pfeffer, he would sprinkle hot pepper between his toes and under his armpits. Pfeffer, of course, means pepper in Yiddish, and that was how Rabbi Avraham Pfeffer got his name. Now he, Rabbi Avraham Scholl, was also an outstanding scholar who could originate his own novel insights on Torah subjects. Even back then, he had already drafted scholarly dissertations of his own. He had even discovered several flaws in Rashi's reasoning, and it required a great deal of hard work to extricate Rashi from the difficulties Rabbi Avraham Scholl had discovered. Rabbi Avraham Scholl recalled that when the Belenitsa genius had finished delivering his 3-hour pilpul from the podium, his father-in-law, Rabbi Avraham Pfeffer, had asked Rabbi Zalman Aparnas to invite the Hafnik genius to speak. Hafnik, a small village not far from Smilovitz, was Rabbi Avraham Scholl's birthplace. He had spent all the years of his youth in Smilovitz as a student of Rabbi Teva Lubavitcher. Once, when Rabbi Avraham Pfeffer passed through Smilovitz, he was so impressed by the Hafniker genius that he took him home to Dubrovne and made him his son-in-law. Being very conscientious about giving due respect to Torah scholars, he always referred to his son-in-law, Rabbi Avraham Scholl, as the Hafniker Eloi, the Hafniker genius. On that occasion, the Belenitsa genius had delivered an exceptional pilpul, for he had just the right audience for it. Besides the great scholars and goyim who came regularly to Dubrovne for the fairs, Dubrovne possessed goyim of its own. Among them, Rabbi Zriel Klotz. For more than 50 years, Rabbi Zriel had spent 18 hours a day sitting and studying. There was a depression in the block of wood upon which he sat, where it had worn away from his constant sitting. That was how Rabbi Zriel Klotz got his name, for Klotz in Yiddish means a block. Another one of the prominent scholars was Rabbi Nechemia, as he was known as Rabbi Nechemia the Blind, who was in fact not totally blind. On the contrary, in his youth he had possessed excellent eyesight, but his vision had been weakened by constant study and insufficient sleep. Nevertheless, he would study Gemara with the commentaries of Rashi and Tosfos by heart. There was also Rabbi Alter Hon, an awesomely great goyim, practically the oldest inhabitant of the town. After attending the Chatzai service each night, Rabbi Alter would stand behind his lectern and study until it was time for davening. After the prayers, he would have a bite to eat. Rabbi Alter was not in the habit of fasting. And after breakfast, he would again stand behind the lectern and study. Because he suffered from severe pains in his legs, he would stand on his right leg for a few hours, then on his left leg for a few hours, then the right one again. Since he always stood on one leg, people called him the Alter Hon, which means a rooster in Yiddish. Right after Meirev, he would go home. Rabbi Alter was no Porush, but he returned by Chatzos Toim and remained until after the next evening's Meirev. Rabbi Alter followed this schedule for over 40 years. When the Belenitsa genius finished saying his pilpul, the Bazdil Klotz was so impressed that he clapped his hands together twice in great excitement. To this, Rabbi Alter commented, "The Bazdil, it's Shabbos. There's a slight possibility that clapping your hands is forbidden because it makes a noise." The Nechemia was even more excited, and he rocked back and forth 3 times, as though it were Simchas Torah. To this, Rabbi Alter commented, "Rabbi Nechemia, Kovod HaTorah, remember the dignity of the Torah as well as your own dignity as a Torah scholar." All the scholars were highly impressed with the Belenitsa genius's pilpul. The Bavrom Scholl still experiences joy whenever he remembers the Zavul Parnas is announcing, "We now call upon the Hafniker genius to give us some new insight or pilpul." A few of the prominent citizens had asked, who is this Hafniker Eloi, the Hafniker genius? But from several quarters, the immediate reply had come. Why? That's the magnate's new son-in-law. The Baal of Lefefer was the wealthiest person in town. Going up to the podium, he delivered an intricate pilpul, during which he pointed out two difficulties in the Belenitsa genius's Torah, for which even Rabbi Alter could think of no solution. When Rabbi Avraham Scholl later passed through Smilovitz with his father-in-law, they visited Rabbi Tevel, who was so impressed upon hearing the Belenitsa genius's Torah that he declared it to be absolutely brilliant. Then, when Rabbi Avraham Scholl told him his own pilpul and the two difficulties he had discovered, Rabbi Tevel was even more impressed and kissed Rabbi Avraham Scholl on his forehead, declaring that this revealed a truly astute intellect. He could think of no solutions to the difficulties, but he promised that by the time they returned from their successful trip, he would have had answers for them if they stopped by for a visit. However, all this was strictly pilpul. The Maggid study, on the other hand, produced novel insights through straightforward logic. When Avraham Scholl arrived in Miznsk for the fair and began to repeat the Maggid's teachings, the elderly Goyim could only shrug their shoulders in amazement, saying that this showed truly outstanding intellect. When Avraham Scholl arrived in Brisk, he engaged the Goyim, his old acquaintances from long ago, in conversation, telling them that in his hometown there lived a great Goyim and Tzaddik. He repeated to them several teachings that met with their solid approval, for each analysis was based upon clever, sound, and sensible reasoning. Rabbi Avraham Scholl described the great skills with which the Maggid taught Agoda and delivered his drashas, and how he inspired everyone to do tshuva. He related that for many years the Maggid had been a student of a great Goyim and Tzaddik who lived in faraway Podolia, Volhynia. In that region lived the Goyim and Tzaddik who performed miracles similar to those seen in the days of the prophets, and was known as the Baal Shem Tov. Once, as a company of several elder Goyim sat together discussing the Baal Shem Tov, one of them reported the rumors he had recently heard. A Jew who was once a simple wagon driver and delivered clay to town unexpectedly began to recite teachings and to perform miracles. The Goyim abroad ordered him to cease these activities, but he refused to obey. Therefore, they pronounced a ban against this miracle worker. Ignoring all this, he continued in his former ways. Now, many Goyim have become his disciples. However, in our country, all the Goyim are opponents of the Baal Shem Tov. This conversation had a great effect upon Rabbi Avraham Scholl, especially the information that the Lithuanian Goyim believed the miracle worker of Podolia, Volhynia, and his disciples to be members of a deviant cult. The Goyim of Lithuania suspected that the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples had departed from true Judaism and adopted false beliefs as a result of their having studied Kabbalah. Rabbi Avraham Scholl left the fair in Brisk in a dejected mood. He traveled as far as Shklov in the company of several great Lithuanian scholars who spoke incessantly about the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples. When Rabbi Avraham Scholl told them that the Goyim who became the town Maggid in Dubrovna had once studied under the Baal Shem Tov, they cautioned him to be wary of the Maggid. If he spent some time studying under the Baal Shem Tov, you had better investigate him very carefully. Rav Avraham Scholl spent the Shabbos before Slichus in Orsha, where Rav Nachman Porush, known as the Melitzitzer genius, was a town maggid. He was famous throughout the vicinity as a great orator. His specialty was the use of metaphor to explain obscure concepts, and he devised metaphors that were easily understood by all. But when Rav Avraham Scholl heard this town's maggid speak, he took such offense that he was unable to speak, and he was beside himself with indignity. Before Rabbi Avraham Scholl could calm himself, the Orosh HaMaggid announced, "Tonight we will begin to say slichas. We must all do tshuva. Those of us who do tshuva will be forgiven by the Creator, and He will grant them, their wives and their children, a good new year. But those who don't do tshuva will be punished by the Creator. They, their wives, and their children will have a new year marred by sickness. The Orshamagid then began to curse them with dreadful curses, which made a horrible impression upon Rav Avraham Sholl. While still a young lad, Rav Avraham Sholl had taken upon himself the custom of fasting every year on the first day of Slichas. He therefore spent that entire day in the Beis HaMedrash from the time they began reciting Slichas until the next day after Ma'ariv. On the second day of Slichas, he left for home. Upon his arrival in Dubrovna, Rav Avraham Sholl was unable to restrain himself, and he went directly to the large Beis HaMedrash, although it was already past the time for Mincha. There he found a large crowd assembled. This caused him to wonder, for so many people were not usually present on an ordinary weekday. Meanwhile, the time for Ma'ariv had arrived. Following Ma'ariv, people began to come from the other shuls. Only then did Rav Avraham Sholl discover that the Magid, Rav Mordechai, was going to preach a sermon. Rav Mordechai, the Magid now of Dubrovna, delivered a passionate tshuva sermon on the verse "V'nefesh kisechto," if a person commits a sin. The entire congregation wept out loud. But when all the listeners' emotions were fully aroused and their spirits were broken, the Magid changed his tone. He began to plead with them and attempted to console them. "The Creator hears the prayer of every person's mouth and searches people's hearts. If we truly do tshuva, the Creator, blessed be He, forgives and pardons us. He grants to everyone who does tshuva a prosperous, good new year. And what about those who have not yet done tshuva? Due to the merit of those who did do tshuva, the one and only Creator will have mercy upon those who still need to do tshuva at present. And He will awaken their hearts as well, that they too do tshuva, so that they and their families may also have a prosperous, good new year." Rav Avraham Sholl was overwhelmed by this sermon, and especially by the Magid's Avas Yisrael, his love of every Jew. It was obvious that he was taking great pains to avoid any harsh words, God forbid, even for those who were irreligious. Ah, what a difference between the Orsha town Magid and our own Magid, thought Rav Avraham Sholl. The Orsha Magid spoke words better left unsaid. He employed foolish metaphors and cursed the audience with cruel expressions. But their own Magid's words of Torah were truly novel. They were precious pearls of wisdom. Everyone was able to understand his speeches, for his clever mishalim, his clever metaphors, made them easy to comprehend. He spoke so lovingly and tenderly that it was a delight to listen. The Magid truly brought the hearts of the Jewish people closer to their Father in heaven. But the Magid is his disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. This realization hit Rav Avraham Sholl like a blow to the head and left him with a stinging sensation in his temples. He himself told us that he spent a long time studying with him. And I heard, both at the fair and brisk and from the scholars traveling to Shklov, that the Baal Shem Tov's credentials are questionable. Rav Avraham Sholl was reluctant even to think about what he had heard in Brisk and on the way to Shklov about the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples. Was the Magid really a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov? He was sure that the Magid had visited the Baal Shem Tov, for he himself had told him so. But if he was actually his disciple, things were very bad indeed. Perhaps, thought Rav Avraham Sholl, he only studied from the Baal Shem Tov, but he was never really his disciple. On the other hand, if he really is a disciple, it's not good. With these troubled and confused thoughts, Rav Avraham Sholl stood listening to the Magid's sermon. The Magid's concluding remarks, his dear and sweet words of consolation, went as follows. Even those who are not observant will be aroused to tshuva in the merit of those who have already done tshuva. These words affected Rav Avraham Scholl immensely. He very nearly convinced himself that a person of the Magid's stature could never possibly have been a disciple of someone like that if what I heard about the Baal Shem Tov in Brisk and from the scholars traveling to Shklov is true. At that point, he suddenly heard the Magid say, "Now I want to tell you a story that happened while I was at the Rebbe's court, at the Baal Shem Tov's court." When the Magid pronounced these few words, saying that he would relate something that had occurred at the Rebbe's court, the Avraham Scholl noticed that the entire Beis HaMedrash became still. This astonished Rav Avraham Scholl, for he was well acquainted with the Jews of Dubrovna. Never in all the time he had lived in Dubrovna had he seen them treat anyone with such respectful deference as they did the Magid. Not even in the old days, when he had first arrived in Dubrovna 50 years earlier. In those days, Rav Baruch Kusye Beirachs was the chief speaker, while his own father-in-law, Baba Lefefer, was the mayor. But they were never treated with the sort of courtesy that the Magid was now afforded. And all this happened during the month that I spent traveling, for it was not like this earlier, thought Rav Avraham Scholl to himself. Beginning with the first Shabbos in Elul, the Magid had introduced a new custom. Following the drasha that was delivered every Shabbos before Mincha, he told a story about his Rebbe that had occurred while he himself had studied with him. The Magid would tell the story and explain the moral to be derived from that story. On that first Shabbos, the Magid related that he had studied at the yeshiva in Smargon, together with many other yeshiva bochurim. In the yeshiva, I was called Mordechai Bayever. I was one of a group of three companions, myself, Beryl Kabelniker, and Chaim Azira, who is none other than our very own Goen, Rav Chaim Lesasner. Later, I married and managed to earn a very good living. Nevertheless, I felt an urge to leave and go into exile. I believed that a great scholar and tzaddik such as myself deserved to have Gili Elio, that the prophet Elijah, reveal himself to me. And since Elio did not reveal himself to me, I concluded that the reason for it was the exile of the divine presence. It was then that I decided to begin studying Kabbalah, to begin studying Jewish mysticism. After studying for several years, I managed to rise high in the ranks of Kabbalah, Baruch Hashem. But this only increased my desire that the prophet Elio reveal himself to me, and made it even more difficult to understand why Elio did not do so. I concluded that it was necessary to spend several more years in constant study with no distractions of any sort. During that period, the Magid related, I studied the complete Babylonian and Jerusalem Talmuds thoroughly. I also worked through the Rambam, as well as studying much Kabbalah and many works of Musar. I was convinced that I had achieved absolute perfection in Torah study and in saintliness, which made it even more difficult to comprehend why Elio, or at least some teacher from the heavenly yeshiva, still was not revealed to me. I then decided to take upon myself a life of exile. Since I was famous throughout that region as a Goan, Kabbalist, and Tzaddik, it was necessary for me to leave for far away places. And the conclusion of the Magid story, God willing, in the next installment.